Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, I got to tell you, it's hard to believe it's been 10 years since the Occupy movement. I mean, it's been 10 years since all of the things that we went through, 10 years since we started talking about the 99% against the 1%. As I was saying back at the time, about time we begin the class war, about time we wake up to the reality that as working people, we've been getting the short end of the stick for a very long time. About time we wake up to all of the divisions that the wealth class has used to pit us against each other so they can rob us blind and do what they've done effectively. They've created the largest billionaire class in the history of civilization, and they've done it off of our backs. Nothing new. You go back to Jay Gould in the 1880s, who said, "I could easily pay half the working class to murder the other half." We're reliving bad history. And here to share some thoughts of the 10th anniversary of the Occupy movement. Maybe share some thoughts on, you know, what's come out of that, the good, the bad, the not so good. I've asked Sharon Seltzer, Sarah Seltzer, to come talk with me. Sarah is the executive editor of Lilith Magazine. She's got a new piece out, Sexism and Racism on the Left. What has and hasn't changed since Occupy Wall Street? She's got this piece over at The Nation. Sarah, thanks for taking some time for us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So
I also can't believe it's been 10 years.
Exactly, right? I mean, I'm looking at this, I'm going, 10 years seems like just yesterday. And, you know, stuff that we've been talking about in this program for years, they were bringing to light. A lot of good things, I think, came out of it. The Fight for 15 movement, the student debt, you know, discussion that came out of it. But, you know, I was on the class war side of things. I was on the side of the only color that matters is green. We need economic equality. Then all of the other stuff would come. I'm curious, what's your assessment of 10 years after?
Well, so when I started kind of hanging around, I was a lefty journalist hanging around Occupy. I decided to write a piece for The Nation actually 10 years ago, almost exactly 10 years ago, about just talking to women who are already very involved. That was about a month or less into Occupy at Zuccotti Park, because the immediate image in the media of Occupy was this sort of classic, like manarchist is what people say, class above all kind of white male image of who was down there. But in fact, that wasn't the case, because as you said, many, many people of all stripes and from all backgrounds were aware of how bad economic equality had gotten and were aware of the raw deal that people got, particularly after, you know, the bank bailouts after the financial crisis. And the chant you could hear all the time on all the marches at Zuccotti was, "Banks got bailed out, we got sold out," over and over again. And, you know, it had a huge effect on a lot of people, including me, in sort of waking us up to just how bad things had gotten. But what the people I spoke to, the women I spoke to 10 years ago, also kind of found was that they were facing a lot of ignorance about how that oppression, how that class oppression interacted or intersected, as we say now all the time, with racism, with sexism, with homophobia. And they had to do a lot of teaching, a lot of education. Like, we can't just say things like, "We're all one race, we're the human race, and, you know, race doesn't matter." And we have to, and there was a lot of discussion about how to interact with the cops, because the police were, you know, down there, there was a lot of horrible police brutality against protesters, but it was much more fraught for people of color who had trauma in that arena in their past. And then similarly, there were there was sexual harassment, there was sexual assault in the park. So what a lot of feminists and, you know, anti-racist activists were finding is that even though they had kind of agreed with the goals of Occupy, they had to do a lot of extra work with their comrades. And that was frustrating, but they were also very excited about it. So what I decided to do this summer was just go back and talk to some of those people and see, you know, what their assessment was 10 years later of that, and what's changed. And I think what a lot of them have felt is that they don't have to do, that some things haven't changed, but they don't have to do some of that educating, that the 10 years since Occupy have seen such a cultural shift in how we talk about class because of Occupy, how we talk about race because of Black Lives Matter, how we talk about sexual harassment because of Me Too, how we talk about gender and transphobia. So you know, Occupy in some ways was the beginning for a lot of people who showed up there of all these conversations that we now kind of take for granted.
Well, I would also argue that it was that spark that got people back into the streets. The idea that working people, that we have power as long as we figure out how to deal with the divisions. Because one of the things the wealth class has masterfully been able to do is pit us against each other on those lines, be it race, be it gender, whatever. They've always been able to divide us. And it's one of those things that I've been talking about for years, that the only way we move forward as a working class is if we can heal some of those. You may not always agree, but find common ground where you can agree and move forward in those directions. And I think Occupy did. I think it did what it was supposed to. It was the seed.
Yeah, I think so too. And so did a lot of the people I spoke to. I mean, because they were so involved in the movement, a lot of the people I interviewed for the piece, you know, had a lot of critiques and nitpicks about what went wrong and what could have been done better. But they, at the end of the day, I think most of them felt that we're having these conversations and we have these figures like Bernie and AOC. And it's not that these figures emerged because of Wall Street, but they're able to say more radical things and propose more radical solutions in part because of the climate that Occupy created that allowed us to talk about class oppression and economic inequality in such stark terms. And AOC is like the sort of classic like post-Occupy figure, because she is so seamless in the way she goes back and forth from her socialism with her discussion of her identity as a woman and as a woman of color. And she's just so fluent and comfortable in all those different languages in a way that people were still trying to hash out during Occupy. So she's like the perfect post-Occupy generation figure in some ways, that, you know, that people at Occupy were striving to educate each other, to be able to talk in all those different languages. But one thing that that was different about Occupy also is there was this constant public presence, right? It wasn't just marches. It was people were living together and eating together and arguing with each other and talking with each other for months straight and suffering together. And I think that a lot of people who were there, even for a few days, who were at the different encampments around the country, went home or went back to their communities and started doing really serious activism or got into politics. I talked to one person who ran for city council and won. She's one of our newest city council women. So it's very, it sparked a million seeds. It planted a million seeds.
Yeah, and I would argue also it gave people, for the first time probably in a lot of people's lives, the opportunity to talk to people that they didn't you know, associate with generally, that weren't living in their neighborhoods. It was a community kind of thing. Now, it had its problems, and I agree there were some problems, but not the way the media blew it out of proportion, that they were just, you know, the message I got, just a bunch of dirty hippies with no ideas. And the reality is they had a lot of very solid policy ideas. The problem is the fringe, the people who were there just to hear themselves speak, they got a lot of the most attention, to where the real issues somehow got lost in some tragic things that also happened.
Absolutely. I mean, there were sort of all those difficult currents that happened towards the end, but you can't forget how amazing and what some of the people I spoke to were saying is how electrifying it was at the beginning, even with the frustrations, even with having to argue with people. There was so much idealism and so much optimism and so many sparks flying. And there was this public square aspect where you're right, people were speaking to people they had nothing in common with in theory, except for politics, and from all walks of life and joining together and learning how to do that kind of activism. I think that there were a lot of people down at Occupy who had worked on the Obama campaign and were disillusioned by what electoral politics could actually achieve. or who had, you know, been involved in more traditional politics and felt frustrated. And that has certainly continued on the left and, you know, with people forming these movements, whether it's BLM or Me Too or the pipeline defense. I mean, there have been these flashpoints in the last decade where the entire left kind of rallied to a cause.
No, and it's to my view, it's because the Democrats, walked away from the working class, decades ago. And we've got too many centrist DLC type Democrats who have not done the things that, Obama to me was a great disappointment. I have a lot of my friends who go, no, he's the greatest president ever. To me, it was a great disappointment. There was so much hope that hope and change was coming, and it didn't just happen. There were a lot of half measures and a lot of things that didn't get done. And like you said, we bailed the banks out, we bailed out the wealthy, but we were still kicking people out of their homes. And out of Occupy came a lot of things. Out of that entire movement came a lot of things. The Home Defenders League, where people were basically just crowding someone's home so the sheriff can't throw all their stuff out in the streets. For me, that's the kind of activism that put us in the position we're in now.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I think, we can't downplay the importance of the moment where the Obama administration chose to bail out the banks, even while the eviction crisis was happening, and that a lot of people had put their faith in that election. And when it didn't work out, when policy-wise exactly as they hoped, that was the spark for Occupy and also for the first wave of Black Lives Matter protests. Those movements were born in the Obama administration, which is always, very interesting to me to remember because we lived through, Trump has caused kind of some amnesia because it was so traumatic.
there's a difference here for me. I'm angry at Obama than I was at Trump. I expected what we got out of Trump. I wanted better from Democrats. I wanted better from Obama because he said, look, you can trust me. We're not going to get these bad trade deals, and we got more bad trade deals. We're gonna help people. We're gonna give people opportunity, hope, and change. It just didn't happen, and for a bunch of reasons. And again, it's the Democratic Party doing their circular firing squad that you're seeing now. That was a big part of it. Obviously, we can rehash Joe Lieberman and all the nonsense that went on around that and the healthcare bill. But it just Democrats aren't delivering the same way that Republicans do, and that's why I think we need these movements to push people in the direction.
It really has changed the discourse so much. I mean, the way Biden talks, obviously there's many imperfections and disappointments there too, but that is a climate that's created in part because of Warren and Sanders running for president and having enormous popularity. And that is in part because of the climate that Occupy and these other movements have created. So you can't understate how important
Understand. Occupy was Athenian democracy, an attempt at Athenian democracy in public square. And democracy is ugly. Democracy is loud. Yeah. It's noisy. And it's to be honest, it doesn't get much done in the moment. But what we've seen, I think, over the last decade is some of the issues that came out of there. We've been making some progress on it. And I think that's the important part, at least for me as someone who showed up to a bunch of those meetings. That's the important part, that something did long term come out of it. As someone who's a labor historian, I read labor history. You go back to the 20s and the 30s of the organizing that happened there. They actually set the groundwork for the passage of the Wagner Act and the explosion of organizing in the 40s. So it takes time for these movements to actually mature and to grow and have leaders and get where we are today, I think.
And that is a lesson that a lot of the people I spoke to, the majority of the people I spoke to were in their 20s when Occupy happened, or now in their 30s. And what they, much like me, and what they said was that, that realization that progress is slow and progress takes different turns and that you have to take moments out to like care for your comrades and for yourself was something that they kind of had to learn the hard way during Occupy because it was so intense and it was 24/7. And they were, we were up at 3 a.m. trying to defend the park when the cops came to evict people. And sort of in the time since then, there's been more of a realization that you can keep pushing slowly and steadily, and there will be these flashpoints like Occupy, but in between, you can still make progress in a sort of slow and steady way.
Yeah. So the question then becomes, we look at this 10th anniversary, what does 10 more years get us? Where do you see us going from this point? Because as you've said, in the last 10 years, there has been a major cultural shift, and you can, the roots are right back to the Occupy movement. Where do you see this going in 10 more years? Do you see a potential backlash? Do you see more growth? How do you see the future playing out?
I don't I think what I've been thinking about a lot since Occupy is that you can never predict what the flashpoint is going to be that brings people out into the streets, right? I mean, no one could have predicted that George Floyd, you could have predicted that something was going to happen around Black Lives Matter, but that would happen during COVID that summer, you know, that summer, that particular moment, you couldn't predict it. I wouldn't have necessarily predicted that Occupy would happen when it did. Something tends to happen to sort of excite the popular imagination and outrage, or even the Harvey Weinstein story, like what happened after that. I wouldn't, you know, so I think that it's a mystery what the next flashpoint is going to be. And the hope is that the activists who have been in all these different movements in the last decade and the younger people coming through who have benefited from their struggles, what will they do with that moment and how will they take advantage of it to push radical change? It's really exciting to think about because there's so much wisdom. I mean, I tend to interview activists. That's like what I love to do as a journalist. And, you know, there's been a lot of wisdom gained over this 10 years of different movements. because a lot of people that I spoke to have been involved in various, you know, some of them were doing pipeline defense, were at Occupy, were involved in Black Lives Matter. So the question, or then got involved in like the Bernie campaign or whatever. So there's, what are they going to do with their experience and their knowledge when the next moment comes? It's a really interesting and kind of exciting question.
Yeah, I think we're in one of those moments right now, especially in the work world. As you're seeing, especially people in the low wage work jobs, mm-hmm. saying, you know what, we're not having this. And I think we're living through a moment of major transition.
I absolutely agree. And I would even draw a connection between the low wage workers refusing to work in these horrendous conditions, like in, you know, the food industry and things like, you know, tennis players, famous tennis players and gymnasts saying, I'm not going to be your performing, you know, I'm not going to be just performing for an audience if my mental health isn't good. I think there's like there's a moment of mass refusal that's sort of quietly happening in all walks of life where people say, I want my life to be more than
I want to be better. I'm right there with
beyond, more than just working. And I want it to be better. I want to have a decent life. Right. So, that's really interesting to me to see kind of where that goes.
Yeah, me too. The piece, Sexism and Racism on the Left, What Has and Hasn't Changed Since Occupy Wall Street, written by Sarah Seltzer. We'll make sure we get links out on social media how you can take a look at that. Sarah, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Good stuff. I appreciate it.
Take care.
I'd love to hear your thoughts as well. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. For working people, come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.